It's a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll take a break from the current schedule and look ahead to this summer by answering some of your mailbag questions.
We'll take a look at some stars who might be available this offseason and what it might take to trade for them. But for now, let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and Fan Rag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ermilla, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation, allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and Fan Rag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DVermel13.
Got a bunch of questions here in our mailbag about nothing about this season, but all about this summer, David, all about what stars the Heat could get to. And so we did a mailbag earlier in the week on Monday, and we had a bunch of these questions left over. So we decided, hey, you know what, let's just throw them all in a second mailbag this week, all having to do with things this summer. We'll take a break from the current playoff race, the current schedule, the current slate of games, whatever, and just let's just look ahead. Let's look ahead to the summer because we know a lot of people, a lot of Heat fans really want to know about those things and what's next for the Heat, despite still being in the mix for the playoffs here. So let's get to our first question. It comes from Sean, who asks, coming this offseason, the Heat will be over the tax limit. Who are they moving? And David, this is a thing that we've talked about quite a bit on this show, really, when it came to the trade deadline. I think we talked about this a lot. Miami is going to be over the cap next season, given how many players that they already have on the roster. They're not going to have cap space this summer at all. They're actually going to have they're going to be $19 million over the cap, right? So they're not going to be quite in the tax, but they're going to be right there up. They're going to be right up against it. And if they want to fill the rest of that roster up, because they don't even have 15 players under contract next summer, and they're only about $2.8 million between their cap number with their current guys on the roster, guaranteed contracts, and the luxury tax apron, where if they meet that amount, $2.8 million over where they're at right now, they're going to be in the luxury tax. So hopefully I explained that well enough. Basically, that if they sign the rest of that roster, that is definitely going to cost at least $2.8 million. So they're going to be over the tax. Well, someone's got to go.
Yeah, we did look a lot. We ranked players' trade ability right before the trade deadline. I think a lot of those same thoughts kind of apply at this point, and we'll go into the summer as well. A guy like Wayne Ellington, as vital as he's been for Miami this season, which has been a huge surprise, we can expect that he probably will not be in the roster. Look, as good as Andy Ellisberg has been at maneuvering the salary cap and trying to figure it out as best as he can, manipulating it to get players under contract, I just can't see a world where Ellington is part of the Heat next year. He's been so good. And although there's no denying that he's probably much more effective and efficient being part of this Miami roster and how Miami utilizes him, I'm pretty sure other teams will look at the raw numbers. And despite the fact that there's an increased amount of analytics influencing decision-making processes, I think he'll still get a much more substantial contract to offer elsewhere. And he probably will not be part of the Heat roster next year.
If you're the Heat, it's as good as Ellington's been. It's not worth paying the luxury tax to keep him, right? Especially right. At the cap figure like you're talking about, it's going to increase. Even you look at guys like Jordan Mickey and Ryan McGruder who have non-guaranteed deals. They might not be back with the team if they're not able to make a move. If they're not able to clear some cap space, even those guys might not be back with the team. You never know. I think McGruder in particular is safe just because his cap figure is so low. But you never know how things are going to work out and what Andy Ellisberg is going to in particular do to finagle some cap space. But you look at the guys who are under contract, the highest paid guys are Hassan Whiteside making $25 million next year, $25.5 million. Tyler Johnson making almost $19 million. Goran Dragic making a little bit over $18 million. And then James Johnson's making $14.6 million and Deion Waiters is making $11.5 million if you're the Heat. And also, by the way, Josh Richardson's extension kicks in next summer, next year as well. So he's going to be making upwards of $9 million. But if you're the Heat, I think if you had your choice of who you wanted to move,
sure,
I think it would be Deion. And by the way, Dwayne Wade, we should mention, is not part of the guaranteed contracts next year. So if they want to bring Wade back, even at the minimum deal, they're going to have to make some sort of move.
If he chooses to come back at all, which he might elect to retire.
Right. Yeah, if he doesn't retire, right. I think if you're the Heat and you could pick one guy to move, it would be Deion. However, Deion Waiters is also dealing. He's coming back from an injury. It's going to be hard to trade him. Could you trade somebody like James Johnson? I don't know. That $14.6 million cap hit next year is pretty steep, even for a guy with James Johnson's skill set. He'll be 31. He's declining. He's not having the most impressive season right now. I don't know if somebody would be willing to take that. So you're looking at, I don't know who you move. I mean, Whiteside,
I think the most
maybe?
Likely, the like Noel. I think Whiteside is probably the best option to trade because of his value for what he produces. Like, as much of an impact as he has on this team defensively in particular, and as good as he can be on occasion, I still think that you look at those numbers and they don't equate to a $25 million salary. So if you're going to look at a player that can be traded, yes, Deion and James Johnson have relatively low cap amounts, but still, with Waiters' injury, if he had had the kind of season that you and I expected him to have, sure, he'd be a lot easier to trade. That hasn't been the case. Coming off of injury, you don't know whether he's going to be fat, whether he's going to come in shape, whether he's going to be as aggressive as he's ever been. Maybe this will be a lingering injury for the rest of his career, and he's just kind of hanging onto the Heat roster, making $12 million a year for doing absolutely nothing. That's always a possibility, and we've seen that from other players around the league. So although that's the worst-case scenario, and I don't expect Deion to make that kind of to plummet as far as that, it's always a possibility. So to me,
and nobody's
honestly,
got a lot of trade for him anyway. With
right,
that
exactly. Yeah, there's not a lot of interest for a gunner that is not as effective, you know, as many other players around the league. So for me, I think the guy who probably offers the best value, honestly, because of his age and everything else, is Kelly Olynyk. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I think there are still inconsistency issues, but considering his relatively low salary, the fact that he's a versatile 4-5. That he can create offense for others, that he can shoot and is shooting at a career high from beyond the perimeter, that he's still relatively young, can play decently on defense. I think all those factors sway heavily in his favor. So if you're going to get a lot of value for somebody, I think it's a guy like Kelly Olynyk who offers a lot of value as well.
I'm glad you brought that up because I do think if the Heat are in a pinch, they're not going to pay that. Like, they already paid this roster. I don't think they have any intent on paying the luxury tax for this team, not for a team that is going to be on the cusp of the Eastern Conference playoffs. They're not good enough to pay that sort of money for. And so if they're I think they're going to try to move James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and probably Hassan Whiteside. I think they're going to try to move those three guys.
Well, they'll take feelers anyway.
Yeah, they might try to move Tyler Johnson, but I don't see them getting much traction with that, especially because Tyler's got that 15% trade kicker. So whatever team takes him on is going to have to pay him even more, up almost $20 million. And that's going to be way too much for Tyler.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think if you're going to look at a guy, I mean, you're not going to move Josh. You're not going to move Justice probably. If anything, you're trying to keep Josh Richardson and extend Justice Winslow. I think Kelly Olynyk is the guy because you're right. I think you can get a first-round pick for him. Not a lottery pick, but you can probably get a middle first-round pick and a role player for Kelly Olynyk. And then more importantly, you get off of $11 million next year, and that brings you – that's not going to give you cap space. That's not going to create $11 million of cap space. The Heat will still actually be over the cap. They won't have any usable cap space, but they're going to be almost $13, $14 million below the luxury tax apron, which is the real important part, because that way you can sort of fill out the rest of the roster with smaller contracts, even a mid-level, and still not have to pay the tax. And that could, and given how well Bam Adebayo has been played this season – It wouldn't be the worst loss. I mean, you could play Justice Winslow at a stretch four. You still got James Johnson there, and you can have Bam Adebayo playing backup center minutes. So Olynyk is a little expendable, even though I think you and I would prefer to trade Whiteside. But as you mentioned, that's probably going to be harder to do than to trade somebody with a more modern skill set like Kelly Olynyk. Yeah. But if you're going to trade him, you probably want. I think Pat Riley put this roster together with the intent of maybe packaging these guys together and moving for a star. We're going to get to that later on in the mailbag. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long that delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
Later on, we'll talk about possibly trading for an Eastern Conference star. Let's look at the Western Conference right now with Billy's question. Billy asks, well, he's not a star yet, but Andrew Wiggins is reportedly unhappy as the third wheel behind Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler. He has the potential to be a star offensively and defensively in Coach Spo's system. Would you trade for him this offseason, and what do you think it would take to make it work? Also, how does Wiggins' poison pill affect any trade for him? So the poison pill contract, and just to get this out of the way first, because there's been some questions about that. That's what happens when a player signs an extension, but the extension doesn't kick in until the following season. So if you were to trade for that player, the outgoing salary would be for the team that's trading him. So in this instance, Andrew Wiggins, the outgoing salary would be his current contract, but the incoming salary for the team trading for Wiggins, for example, would be more in line with his extension salary next year. So it creates some weird math, right? So I think this year, off the top of my head, I think for Wiggins, it would be an outgoing salary of $5 or $6 million and an incoming salary of something like $12 million. Right. And so that creates some wonky math because contracts have to align.
Yes.
When NBA teams, that said, that's not going to impact anything because Wiggins' contract extension kicks in this summer and next season. And so the poison pill contract was an issue at the trade deadline. It's no longer going to be an issue going forward. So that's not an issue anymore, but that's a little explainer on poison pill contracts.
Now,
Wiggins is making seven. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I think, you know, to Billy's point, and for those listeners that aren't aware, there was a report last week from a local area of Minnesota-based radio station that there were, quote unquote, whispers around the team that Andrew Wiggins was unhappy about his place on the roster right now. So none of those have been confirmed. Wiggins hasn't said anything right now. But even with Jimmy Butler hurt and Wiggins taking on an expanded role, the rumor is that he's not exactly happy being the third option behind Karl-Anthony Towns, which is something that we can question because, and honestly, I don't think Karl-Anthony Towns gets used nearly enough. So I think Wiggins has a higher usage rate than Kat does at this point, and certainly behind Butler, even with Butler having missed so much time.
I'm not that high on Andrew Wiggins. I mean, maybe I don't think Minnesota is as high on him as they are Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler, and for good reason. I think they deserve to be the number one and number two options. But let's talk about, I mean, look, this is the type of situation, right? Like if this is true and Andrew Wiggins is unhappy and he becomes an issue in that locker room and they do try to move him. And I think if you're Minnesota, maybe it's worth looking to move Andrew Wiggins if you're able to get the right kind of players back and assets back to continue to build around Butler and Karl-Anthony Towns. And if that's what you're trying to do, well, what are you going to be looking for in a trade, right? If you're Minnesota, what are you looking for to move Wiggins? Now, that contract, it's 4 years, $146 million. That's a pretty steep price to pay. They have already invested in Wiggins. So with that being said, I think their preference is to hang on to him and see what he can bloom into. But if he becomes an issue, I could see them trying to move on from him. And if that's the case, I mean, I don't know that the Heat have necessarily what it's going to take to trade for Andrew Wiggins, because I think Minnesota would at least want a draft pick, like a first round pick back in return, plus some younger assets. I don't think that they're not going to take Tyler Johnson on that salary. They're not going to take a Deion Waiters type, I don't think. At least not as the basis of a deal. If you're Miami, I don't think, you know, maybe you propose Deion Waiters and Bam Adebayo. That would be the proposition if I'm Miami. I think Bam Adebayo and Karl-Anthony Towns in that front court would be devastatingly effective for them. That could be a really interesting pairing. I think they could play next to each other. But if I'm Miami, I don't necessarily know if I want to do that. If I want to necessarily move Bam even for Wiggins, because I'm not very high on Wiggins, and I'm certainly not moving Justice Winslow or Josh Richardson for Andrew Wiggins. I wouldn't do it. I think what those two offer defensively and then in between outside of just scoring is much more than what Andrew Wiggins does. He's an ineffective, high volume shooter. Andrew Wiggins has one good game out of every five or six. I'm not a big fan of Andrew Wiggins, but I do understand, to Billy's point, he does have natural talent and maybe could blossom into something, and maybe Spoelstra can get more out of him. What are your thoughts on Wiggins?
He's 23. I think he's got a higher offensive ceiling than any player that we have on the roster right now.
I don't necessarily
have as much of an issue. Like, I'll be honest, I know that the people who watch the Timberwolves closely aren't as sour on Wiggins overall. The kind of narrative that's spun out of his short career, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was drafted number one overall, and you want to see a player blossom to an immediate superstar. It's kind of funny how, like, even on his own roster, Karl-Anthony Towns is a second coming here, and he can do no wrong, even though there are obvious holes in his game. Wiggins, conversely, can do no right. You know, he's been questioned whether or not he offers anything other than scoring. They've questioned his heart. They've questioned his willingness. They've questioned his talent. This deal made a lot of sense for a lot of Wolves fans and Wolves pundits. But outside of that, I think a lot of people criticize the decision-making process of the organization. So it's kind of curious, and I think it's probably like most things, somewhere in between, where he does have problems, but there's also potential and willingness to grow. Now, I did get a chance to talk to both him and Jimmy Butler when Minnesota was in Orlando, and I talked to them specifically about their partnership and their ability to grow. And from Wiggins' perspective, you know, he was looking forward to it. He really liked the idea of Butler as a mentor. So I didn't get a sense that there was any kind of strife there. Maybe it's kind of...
Was this before the season? Was this
it
like...
Was, when was this? I think late... I want to say late January, maybe early February. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, so okay.
It was before the Butler injury and before the All-Star break. So I don't know if something's cropped up since then. And from Butler's perspective, conversely, all he spoke about... He spoke glowingly of Andrew, but he also said that work was the key for a guy like Butler. And I think this is a huge thing. This is why I think you and I both agree that Butler would have been a great target for Miami. His work ethic is so unquestionable. Like, he might be weird. He might have OCD. He might have all these quirks on the court and off the court, but for the most part, he's built himself up so completely from the player that he once was when he was drafted to the all-star superstar that he is now, that I think he puts such a high premium on work that when others don't duplicate that same level of work effort, he gets kind of pissed off and frustrated with him. And I think re-listening to his audio when this came up a couple of weeks ago, like the fact that, or last week, he, you know, his reiterating of work, and that as being the defining factor of success, I wonder if Wiggins is willing to put in the work. And I think that's something that's going to be a problem for Miami. So to temper.
Yeah. Tom Thibodeau is no slouch either. Right. It's not like he's coming from, a lazy organization. It's not like he's going from the Phoenix Suns or something like that to Miami. He's going to be going in this hypothetical scenario from Tom Thibodeau to Eric Spoelstra. So it's not like he was and playing with a guy like Jimmy Butler. So it's not like he's foreign to the idea of working hard. So if they can't get it out of him, I don't know. And I have the most confidence in Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and the hashtag culture and everything like that. But if Thibs can't get it out of him, and if Jimmy Butler can't get it out of Wiggins, it would only maybe be time and maturity that get Wiggins to start doing that.
Which is,
or I don't know, maybe a change. Maybe there's a change of scenery factor there. Maybe he leaves the team that picked him number one, not really picked him number one overall, but kind of did.
Yeah, no, and that could be the factor to sway even an opinion like yours in the favor is that the hope. And maybe that's a lot to rest on, that he'll eventually mature and then he'll find his fit as the quote unquote superstar of a team, you know, something that he's never really had the opportunity to do. He was kind of getting his feet wet his first year in Minnesota. Then they acquire Karl Anthony Towns. That changed the dynamic of the team. Then they acquire Jimmy Butler. That completely changed it. So it's a lot like Kyrie Irving in that sense that, you know, he expected something different than what played out. And while the ceiling for that team wasn't a championship like it was in Cleveland, it's changed on Andrew, and he kind of wants to kind of take a step back. Is it worth making that?
Kyrie's a little bit more. Kyrie was more proven, though.
Was he? I mean, think about Kyrie's game. Like,
he won a title. He won a championship.
Being what? And what did he win a title being? A score first guard, right? A guard that can't defend a paper bag.
I don't know, but at least I know he could do it in the playoffs. And consistently.
Minnesota hasn't made the playoffs. You don't know what Andrew can
do. I know, but Wiggins doesn't even score like Kyrie Irving does on a game-to-game basis. He does it every other game, maybe.
Look, you want to be down on him, you can be down on him. I'm not going to try and change that.
Okay, no, but let's go. My mind is open, and you're right. He's 23 years old, and I think the idea of having somebody with Wiggins' talent is tantalizing on Miami. And he's the sort of guy that they need, a guy who can create his own shot. And then maybe they can teach him to create for others. So let me go back to the original point here. What would you move for him? Anything on Miami's – would you move Josh Richardson for Andrew Wiggins?
No, I don't want that. I wouldn't because I love Josh and his overall impact.
I want to know what you would trade. So would you trade Deion Waiters and Bam Adebayo? Would you offer that for Wiggins? I think I'm with you. I think I would do the same thing. Specifically because you still have Whiteside there and you're probably not going to be able to trade.
Yeah, they don't need Whiteside with Karl Anthony Towns there.
They would not take him, right.
A future first Deion Waiters. A future first Deion Waiters and Bam Adebayo for Andrew Wiggins.
That's giving up too much. I don't think you'd do the first round pick.
I mean,
And I don't think that would necessarily be valuable for Minnesota because we're talking about, what, 2023?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Miami would do it.
Right, I think they'd
I'm
be
sure
like,
Miami
nah.
would do that.
I think, yeah, I think they would have to work out a third team into the deal to take either Dragic or Whiteside or Olenek.
Now they can move Whiteside. Yeah, earlier. Whiteside to a third team.
Yeah, and get an earlier for a more current.
Whiteside to Portland again. Rounder. McCollum to Minnesota. Geez. Yeah.
McCollum. No, I don't think they're breaking that up. Anyway, that would be what, but not Richardson. Would you move Winslow for Wiggins? I would not.
Yes.
Let's move on to our final mailbag question. But first, did you know that you can listen to Locked On Heat on your home assistant, like Amazon Echo or your Google Home? It's a hands-free way to listen to the latest episodes of Locked On Heat or any of the other Locked On Podcast Network shows. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, our final mailbag question comes in from Taylor, who asks, do the Heat make a play for John Wall this summer despite how ugly that contract gets later on? Wall and Beal don't seem to mesh. This is an interesting thing. So we could have this conversation about John Wall and Bradley Beal, right, if they mesh. I think we're going to find that out. I think there's a lot of national media just sort of blowing this issue off. Absolutely. I would not go as far to blow it off. I do think that there are things that you need to figure out, whether or not you mesh or not. You look at what happened in the Clippers. That team ultimately didn't mesh, even though they were very effective. That's something that they need to figure out, though I do think John Wall and Bradley Beal mesh. In my personal opinion, I think they're fine. But we'll find out more in the playoffs and later on when John Wall eventually returns and we'll see how the Wizards play then. But that said, John Wall has not been that happy in Washington, seemingly, right? There's been issues that have cropped up here and there. So if Washington does decide to move John Wall, and that might also be their best way to improve the roster. I think Bradley Beal at this point is their best player overall. If they're looking to make changes and flip some things around, moving John Wall might be the best way to do that. So hypothetically, let's say John Wall's on the market. I think the Heat definitely make a play. I think that's the sort of player that they would be after. Now, I don't
see that. This is the one I disagree with. I don't agree that Wall is a realistic target.
Be a realistic target. I agree with you on that. But he would be, right?
Yeah, because I think, look, the strategy for 21 years of Pat Riley, you know, being part of the Miami is looking for disgruntled superstars or stars and seeing what you can do to trade for them and acquire them. It happened with Alonzo Mourning. His first action was to trade away an all-star on this team, Glenn Rice, and move him for another one in Alonzo Mourning. So I think that's – you look at that defining characteristic of Riley, and yes, Wiggins, Wall, whomever else might be available this summer, Kawhi, if the rumors are true.
I mean, you would prefer Beal. Would you prefer Beal?
My issue with –
okay, so we agree that Beal is our best player at this point.
Because I think he's shown over the last few weeks that he's a really good playmaker, or capable of being a good playmaker. He may not be as aggressive. He may not have the extra it factor, and I know that's as vague as hell, but I think I think John Wall has it. He's got that kind of extra level that I don't know that Beal is capable of reaching, but I think Beal is a more versatile player, better defender, I think,
Washington
than John Wall is.
If
maybe
they had to move one of them, it's questionable. Be I mean, it would be Wall. Yeah.
I think so. I think, and I think the problem is the attitude. I think for Wall to be hurt and then to kind of pick fights with Bradley Beal and Martin Gortat and everybody else on the damn roster, and it shows a lack of self-awareness that you kind of have to go, look, man, everybody else is saying these things, and maybe I am part of the problem. And I know there's kind of, you're not hardwired as a player, or most players are not hardwired that way, to look at themselves as being part of the problem because, well, they're superstars that have made it into the NBA, have made the impossible possible. But I think he needed to open himself up to that criticism and understand that it could be constructive and that maybe he'll come back and be a better part of this team. Like, I still am holding out hope in some sense, you know, not from a Wizards fan perspective, obviously, but from a fan of the league in general, that when a player gets hurt, they have the option of internalizing it and seeing what's been missing and what they could provide to kind of blend in and make this team better still. Like a lot of the narrative, as you pointed out, is that, are the Wizards better without John Wall? Absolutely not. I mean, Wall is very good. And everybody on that team told me personally that, of course, they would want Wall back on that roster if they could have him. But, you know, he that doesn't mean that he doesn't have faults.
You can sort of see that from the sideline in Wall's perspective. You could say, okay, this is what these guys can do when I'm not there. Because it's hard for a player to just learn that on the fly and figure that out as he's going. It could help having that. And we're going to learn a lot about John Wall when he comes back. And I'm with you. I'm optimistic that thing could work out. But that doesn't make for a good mailbag, and that doesn't answer Taylor's question. So let's say John Wall hits the trade block. And you and I are dubious that that's even going to happen. But let's say it happened. Let's say John Wall just says, I don't want to play here anymore. I'm sick of Washington. It's not a big enough market for me. I still don't have a shoe deal I'm excited about, even though he's signed with Adidas. I want to be a bigger star here. I want to go to Miami. I want to go to South Beach, or I want to go to LA, or I want to do something like that. So let's say Miami gets into the mix and for a John Wall trade. I think the trade that's sitting there for both teams, and this would have to require Wall saying, I want out, or I'm going to be miserable here. So right. Washington would have to take a little bit less in value. But the trade that's sitting there between Miami and Washington is Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside for John Wall and one of those bad center contracts, either Gortat or Ian Mihini. And obviously the Heat would prefer Gortat, but negotiations happen. It would be either Gortat or Mahimi. That's the deal that's sitting there. That is a major upgrade at center for Washington. They are able to still keep an all-star point guard at that position who might be a little bit more deferential to Bradley Beal and even Otto Porter Jr., who's blossomed this year for them. I've really liked Otto. I don't think I've seen Otto Porter Jr. miss a three-pointer all season long. It seems like every time I watch the Wizards, he's making threes. So maybe that would be the deal that's sitting there. If you're the Heat, you get your star player in John Wall, and you get a replacement center that, albeit a bad contract, but you do get somebody there. Is that sort of the framework you think would happen?
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it would be, and that's tough to pass up from either team's perspective. Like, I think both teams get better, which is the weird part.
I mean, I think the other option there is if that's not enough for the Wizards, right? Because if they're able to get a draft pick or something, and I don't necessarily think that they'd be looking for a draft pick. I think Washington would be looking for players that can help right now and kind of get them over the hump.
Yes,
which would be Miami's. That would be Miami's in, right? Like, that would be the crack in the door that they need to get an all-star. I think John Wall, I agree with you. I don't think it would be Washington's ideal situation here, but if John Wall just gets annoyed, I mean, we've seen stars just, I don't want to play here anymore. And that's what it would take.
Now, we have to take into consideration the divisional thing. Like, they're going to play four times a year. Do they really want to go up against a pissed off John Wall four times a year, regardless of what impact he has in Miami overall? You know he's going to go off for 40 every time he matches.
Unless
up against
they've got
Washington.
Some inside information that Adam Silver is about to just get away with divisions and conferences altogether, and then just we'll play the long game here. I mean, look, Boston, Cleveland traded their second best player to the number one seed in the East. I mean, this stuff happens. I don't know how much these guys actually care about, you know, even 3 or 4 games out of the year playing a former player. I think players move so much now anyway that it's almost just kind of the nature of the league at this point that you're going to be almost every night playing somebody that once played for you. Now, it might not be to a player the caliber of John Wall, but that said, it's kind of a normal thing now. So I don't know how much that would actually play in to their decision making. But it would be interesting. And if you're the Heat, I think you do that, by the way. I think Dragic is on – love Dragic, right? But his best basketball is probably behind him. I mean, this 3-game road trip might be the best basketball he ever plays ever again. And then if you can throw Whiteside in there, I don't see why you wouldn't do it. And then you've got
– So from our perspective, we wouldn't do the trade. But from the Heat perspective, they'd absolutely do the trade.
Oh, so you would not trade Dragic and Whiteside for Wall?
I wouldn't want it.
I would do it.
I just don't like John Wall's attitude at this point. And that might change, but I don't like what I saw from him this past year. And you know, that's been a problem. Look, I know that's kind of like, I haven't talked with him. I haven't seen, you know, how he interacts personally. He might be a wonder. Look, from everything we've heard, there's a lot of good stuff that he does off the court there, but there's also enough there to question whether or not he'll blend in well. I don't know. Maybe it's a good deal. I mean, I'd hate giving up Goran.
I know, but that would be – you're able to get rid of Whiteside.
It's the right move.
So you lose one attitude and you get a new attitude, I guess. But Dragic's presence in the locker room would be really hurtful. But then again, I mean, it's the sort of thing I suppose you have to do if you want to make a play for a star. And like the Wizards would be in a situation where they're not looking for draft picks, which is the one thing that's been hurting Miami in any move to land a star, is the fact that they don't have picks to move. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. We'll be back next week. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments to our recaps by using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.